Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 24th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Hover.com, the domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to tnt.hover.com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I am Becky Worley.
I'm the board's our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day without stopping.
No.
Nothing gets in the way.
Nonstop.
Not rain, nor sleet, nor snow.
Nor 100-degree temperatures and the smell of hot cow poo outside.
Whether Lady Gaga was better when she was Stephanie Germanotta.
That will not be discussed on this particular podcast, Tom.
Instead, Microsoft's bringing down the hammer.
Boom.
We talked yesterday about how Halo Reach got leaked. And this is kind of a rite of passage for any Halo game, is that it gets leaked before it actually comes out. But Microsoft's not taking it lying down. They are, according to Stephen Toulouse, Microsoft's Director of Policy Enforcement for Xbox Live. What a great, yeah, what are you? I'm Director of Policy Enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Stephen Toulouse says Microsoft will permanently ban anyone who plays the leaked Halo Reach game on Xbox Live.
And then he furthers in his post and says, we have ways of knowing.
He said it like this. We have ways of knowing.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing that
it's
should
too bad
be-
he doesn't have a more German name. Stephen Toulouse.
Toulouse.
At worst, we could call him like Vichy.
Well, we work for a French guy, so, you know, fear the French. That's all we can say. Laporte is danger. But, you know, the interesting thing here is this is not a press release coming out from Microsoft. This was in response to a question he received via Twitter. And then he said, let me go check with our standards and practices, came back, and this was his response. So it's not like they're really coming down with a corporate edict about this. It's just this is the pat answer to you play a game that's leaked. You risk being permabanned. I like the word, too.
Run the risk of the permaban. And he points out legit store-bought copies run no risk of ban. So keyword unauthorized, and that's where he says we have the vase.
The vase of Zenoing. And actually, CNET says they went and looked on the Pirate Bay. 88 users seeding the file, and as of yesterday, there were about 530 people in the process of downloading it just when they checked. So it's making its way around.
That's not as many as I might expect, honestly. 88 seeders isn't bad, but only 500 active downloads.
In the moment.
Yeah, I would expect it to be more in the thousands.
They feel the permaban.
Maybe they heard about the permaban, exactly.
It sounds like permafrost to me. It's so, like, cold, and it's like in the tundra of no Xbox 360.
Yeah, in the Microsoft tundra, when you dig below the surface, you reach the permaban level. Nothing can grow in that.
The only thing that grows there is the PS3.
Yeah, you get a little bit of lichens on your PS3, and that's about it. Windows Phone 7 SDK is going to come out September 16th. This is an official announcement from Microsoft. They noted that 300,000 people have downloaded, more than 300,000 people have downloaded the beta version of Windows Phone 7's developer's kit. So they've decided to make it official on September 16th for all developers to get the full deal. They're going to put in more visual tools, more ways of interacting with Bing Maps, as well as a whole training course that includes a lot of videos. So if you don't like to read, you don't have to.
No, you can go check out the videos. There are seminars that are being hosted. You can feel the momentum certainly building for Windows Phone 7. And it's interesting. I went over to identitymind.com, a guy named Kurt Brockett, and he has a list of all the rumored Windows Phone 7 devices coming out. So here's the rundown that is rumored.
Okay.
7 HTC phones.
Yep.
3 LG.
Okay.
3 Samsung. 2 Asus. 1 Sony. 1 Dell. Main carrier listed AT&T with 4 of the phones. And then there were no other carriers listed, so you kind of figured that the rest will be a hodgepodge of that. And then this was the part that was interesting to me, is the HTC code names and the code names for some of these. So it'll be the HTC Mozart, the HTC Schubert,
Oh, so these aren't the real names. These are just internal code names.
Right, probably. But what does that mean? What, are they marketing them to like 65-year-old aficionados?
Well, no, that's what I mean. It's not going to be the actual name of the device, right? This is just an internal code name?
Yeah, but I always think there's some subtext. Like, I always go back to, you know, all the Tillamooks and the,
yeah, right.
You know, the Chehalis and all that kind of stuff.
A lot of times it's just the same thing that goes when you name your printers on a network. And you're like, well, that one's Archie and that one's Veronica and that's Jughead. And you know, it doesn't mean anything.
There's something going on. The Sony is called the Juliet.
The Juliet? Oh, so it's all very Renaissance.
I know.
Maybe Microsoft's trying to, if we're going to parse.
Oh, yes, let's.
Maybe Microsoft's saying that this will be a Renaissance of the Windows platform.
In mobile.
In mobile.
Okay. We've just cracked the code, Tom.
We cracked the code.
Mine's at work.
Get the warrants.
Yes.
LG C900 has a photo, or a purported photo anyway, and this is one of the Windows Phone 7s. And Gadget says Bluetooth SIG, which is the Bluetooth group, has a long history of promoting its members' quote special interests by leaking information ahead of time. And they recently unearthed the LG C900 and pegged it for a launch date around September 28th, according to the SIG's detail page. So this would make it most likely the first Windows Phone 7 to hit the market, unless there's some other super secret one that we haven't heard yet.
Right.
But the LG C900 is one of those three LG phones that you mentioned. So maybe one of the other LG phones could go out. I don't know. But September is before what we've heard as far as the marketplace opening up. So would they put a phone out before they've opened the marketplace? Because we heard the marketplace would open October.
You mean putting the cart before the horse? No,
a
technology
take a horse
company would
and
never
try to push a cart with that.
Who knows? Logic.
Well, Apple did.
Come on. One thing that I have to say is this phone's kind of exciting looking. For those of you who are just listening and not watching, it's a kind of a rounded edge. It has a pull down 4-row keyboard. It just has two buttons on the capacitive space underneath the screen, and then it has a Windows key in the middle. It looks kind of sleek. What do you think?
Yeah, it looks nice. I mean, I want to use Windows Phone 7 phones first. I want to figure out if this operating system is going to be as good as it promises to be. Mm-hmm. And then I can start worrying about the hardware that it runs on and the QWERTY keyboard. But this looks perfectly acceptable.
Well, that's the first step. Let's just put it that way. If the hardware looks like it can at least play ball, then you can get into figuring out how the UI looks and feels.
Right. Definitely. All right. Let's move on to, there's a lot of Microsoft news today. It's like the old days. I know you guys are always writing and complaining. We talk about Microsoft all the time.
I hate it. We can't get away from
but
Redmond.
Listen, folks, it's 2002 and all the news is about Microsoft these days. So we used to actually get that complaint on Buzz Out Loud, like back in 2005. All you ever talk about is Microsoft.
Why won't you talk about Apple? That was the tech TV complaint.
Why do you people never talk about Apple?
You hate Apple.
Why do you hate them so much? Microsoft has confirmed that a Windows DLL vulnerability is being exploited in the wild. This is an old vulnerability, and Microsoft just came out Monday and said, "Yep, this vulnerability exists, and we are seeing an example of it out there in the real world for the first time."
I think what's interesting about this, if I can try and break down exactly what's happening, it's very complicated. It's been around for a long time, but this is something that's built into the architecture of the operating system. Microsoft knows about it, but they're really in between a rock and a hard place to fix it because the backwards compatibility for a lot of different programs would be seriously altered and they would get very buggy if they actually fixed this sort of fundamental thing that's going on here. So let me see if I can explain this. So the way it is right now in Windows, DLLs can load from multiple sources. It can be from, you know, an existing library, or what they call a current library, or the most recent library is basically the best way to describe it.
What's the current directory, right? It's whatever directory the application thinks is the one it's residing in, which can be changed from the one it launches from.
Right. And so that's where the issue is a perfectly safe file that you might open that's traditionally considered a safe file. They might be able to associate a DLL with this that then opens concurrently. That's where the vulnerability lives. And you're thinking, hey, that MP3 is cool to open. Hey, that JPEG's cool to open. But you're not realizing, and your system's probably not able to recognize, it's also pulling a DLL from the library, that's the directory that's not where it's supposed to be pulling it from. And that's where you can launch the malware.
Yeah, it used to be the problem would be that you'd put your DLL in System32 folder, and then the bad DLL could go in the same directory as the app. So when it launched, that would be the current directory, and it would load the bad one first. Microsoft has fixed that. They've changed it, so the operating system actually looks in System32 and other official locations before it looks at the current directory.
Right.
But even so, the app might be loading a DLL that isn't in the System32 directory, and it could actually make, you could change the app to have the current directory be somewhere on the internet through WebDAV.
Right.
And that's when you can, so then you can send people an email with a bad link that launches the application, change the location of the current directory, and then it's all bad from there.
And so they're warning the program makers and saying, hey, it's kind of on you guys to recognize that this is an issue, work around it. We know we can't fix it because we're going to get so many bug reports and it'll make people crazy. So this is one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situations for Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. Because if they fixed this, if they patched it and said, okay, you can't load from the current directory anymore, then you would break a bunch of applications. It really needs to be fixed by the software developers, but the software developers aren't all on the ball and fixing as fast as possible. So it puts Microsoft between a rock and a hard place.
You stole that from me.
I did?
Yeah, I made that up, that rock and a hard place thing.
Oh, it puts Microsoft throwing a bathwater and a baby out at the same time.
Yeah, fire in the frying pan.
Yeah, out of that fire and there's a frying pan right there.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just made that up. There's one option that they could do. They could make it require system administration approval to run DLLs from the current directory for particular applications. That requires a lot more user intervention, though.
That's never a good thing.
It's going to have to be. I mean, this is just the first exploit in the wild. It's going to have to be a really, really bad attack. Something really bad is going to happen. A really bad bug that starts going around, or a bad piece of malware that starts going around, before they actually go that far. Before they can say, "Look, we've been pushed this far. Sorry, we're going to break some programs, but we have to do this."
Code red part two.
Code red. Code. Who ordered the code red on the DLLs? You can't handle loading your own DLLs from the current directory. All right, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, Hover.com. Hover's all about making domain registration and services simple. Over the years, domain registration sites have creepingly become more and more complicated. So if you go to a site to register a domain, you may have to look at 50 or some other clicks just to buy that domain name, that one domain name. Hover has taken the opposite approach. They want to make it easy. They don't sell a ton of services. They just want to make it easy to register and manage your domains. They used to be called Domain Direct, if you remember them. They've been doing domains since 1997, and they have a complete help resource area with how-tos on transferring domains, managing domains, locking domains, all that stuff. And best of all, they have a no-hold policy. So if you call Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern time, you will get a live person. They will not put you on hold. You will not get to sample their lovely hold music. You'll have to call after they're closed if you want to sample that. Otherwise, you get a live person. So check them out. Hover is simple domain registration. Go to tnt.hover.com. Use the offer code TNT. You'll get 10% off. So remember both of those, tnt.hover.com, offer code TNT.
Tom, big news in the hardware chip world. And if I just gave you that headline, you'd think Intel, AMD, right?
Right.
Microsoft has beat Intel and AMD to the punch, creating the first mass market desktop class processor combining CPU, GPU, memory, and I/O logic onto one single piece of silicon.
First mass market desktop class processor, for those of you writing an email saying it's been done before. There was that caveat in there. The goal of the consolidation is to lower the power consumption, lower the heat of these things. As you remember, the Microsoft Xbox 360 can get pretty hot.
And that was the part that I forgot to say. It's in the Xbox 360 Slim.
Oh, right. You didn't say that part,
no,
did you?
Let me just share that with the folks at home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if you're wondering, where is this fabled chip? Well, now you know. It's an ATI-designed CPU and a triple-core, ATI-designed GPU and a triple-core CPU, dual-channel memory controller and I/O. But the purpose is to be efficient. The new SoC has only 372 million transistors, not very many by today's standard. And the new 45-nanometer SoC draws over 60% less power and reduces the total silicon area by over 50%. The power and die area savings means they can do with a single fan and heat sink, what they used to require a bunch more, and it means people won't be burning themselves. You won't hear that bad fan noise like you did on the old Xbox 360s. Now, one thing they didn't do is connect the CPU and the GPU with a high bandwidth, low latency internal connection. They actually recreated a sort of front side bus type of thing on the silicon. And the reason they did that is they had to keep the chip from working too fast.
And when I read that, I thought, well, what is that? Is that standards? Why would they want the chip to be slower intentionally?
I believe it's so that your game, so that it's compatible with all the Xbox 360 architecture. You don't want it to just run too fast.
Like throwing, you gave the example of putting an old school game.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one way to think about it is, remember, if you take an old DOS game and you run it in Windows XP or definitely in Windows 7 these days, there are programs you have to run to slow those DOS games down or else you wouldn't be able to play them. Hey, have you ever tried running an old DOS Pac-Man? It's like the ghosts get you before you can start. Because right. Everything is just running in that time. So,
now, the interesting question I have here is, okay, so let's say Microsoft innovates this. Is this something that we're going to see from an architecture perspective in our desktop boxes? I mean, Microsoft's obviously taking a lot of pride in the Xbox 360 side of their business, but how do they plan to leverage this as a moneymaker as a hardware piece?
Well, I'm sure they could. They're probably, they've done this in combination with IBM. So I imagine IBM is the one that's going to benefit the most out of this. I don't think we'll see Microsoft getting into the chip business. But it will show the way towards the continued acceleration and combination of the GPU on the chip. The GPU is the new CPU, as you hear a lot of people say that, and being able to integrate that. Intel's already doing this sort of like moving the GPU onto the die. So it's our first in the market look at this, but there is a lot more coming in this space for sure.
Tom, I'm so sick of your Microsoft news. You're just killing me with this. Can we have some other news, like maybe Apple? We never talk about
them. Yeah, we hardly ever talk about the little company down in Cupertino.
Yeah, they got a little bit of market share. Can't we give them at least throw them a bone?
Well, they filed an interesting patent I guess we could talk about. It's an iMac Touch. It's a patent for a device that would allow your desktop to turn into a touch device by the way you rotate the screen, and would even switch between two operating systems, presumably iOS and OS X.
So for those of you who are listening, I'm going to try and paint the picture for you. So we're talking about an iMac, which is a computer basically built into a flat screen. So imagine that you've got your hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, and the steering wheel is actually the monitor that is the iMac. So you're kind of holding it right out in front of you. Now, in that orientation, you're running OS X. You got your keyboard, you got your mouse, you're using all your traditional I/O methods. Now, pull it down so that it's flat, and using my steering wheel analogy, it's like you're driving a bus. You know how when you drive a bus and it's like driving a dinner plate? So now the thing is oriented almost flat on the desk, maybe a little bit of an angle.
So when you're holding it up here, you're at OS X and 2. and then when you push it down,
You're driving the OS 4 bus, the front side bus. And then just by that, perhaps the accelerometer changes the orientation changes the operating system.
Now that's the part I haven't figured out. In fact, they have in this patent a way for doing this on a laptop. So you'd grab your laptop at a particular point, and that would switch it into touch mode, and there would be iOS 4. If you're looking at the patent, points 505 on the right and left side.
10 and 2
are where you. No, it's not really.
Kind of 10 and 2 on your monitor.
I get. No, 10 and 2 would be up farther up.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Okay.
They're so down at the bottom.
4 and 7, 4 and 8.
I need an analog clock. So anyway, but when you do that, it supposedly changes it to iOS and makes a touchscreen. What I don't understand is if I did that right now on my MacBook, how do these applications switch, or do they? Do I just lose everything that I've got now? Does Firefox become an iOS app? Does Colloquy go to its iOS form? Or is it just say, like, forget it, you're going to an entirely different operating system?
Well, that's the question is, when you boot, does it go into a dual boot concurrently? But that would seem to just be such a huge resource hog that wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So transition seems like a big issue. And then, like you said, what the memory and the state of your, you know, you're like your last state of your system, is that saved?
And I didn't read all the way through the patent. Maybe it's covered in there somewhere. But
you know, one thing that was really interesting is the possible uses for this. So imagine that you're using video editing software and you throw this bad boy down into the touch scenario, and it goes into what what when they had in the patent, they have a drawing of this. It looks like the old deck-to-deck editing. And you could see how you would just grab clips, throw them into the timeline. You trim by pulling on one side or the other. There's a little wheel so that you could. It looks just like the old decks.
Oh, there was a patent filed on July 10th for that touchscreen. Mm-hmm. So this could all fold into.
And that's a brilliant use of it because you're kind of thinking, well, why would I want my desktop to be touch-enabled? This is a perfect place for it because I think that especially with something as tactile as video where you really do want to feel it, I think that's an interesting use.
Or a DJ app. Look, they actually include that in their patent drawing. Oh, my
God. It's a full turntable.
Place like finger it. At 844. Scratch to position 834.
That would actually be really classic, hearing like hip-hop terminology described in legalese. We're going to get Denise Howell in here to read it. That'd be awesome.
Absolutely. All right, enough Microsapple news. Let's talk about Toshiba reportedly prepping a glasses-free 3D TV for launch at the end of this year in Q4.
Finally. I've had it with the 3D TV being all about the glasses. I think everybody's waiting for this to be glasses-free.
Is it going to be any good, though?
Did you see some of the examples at CES? Uh-huh. Which ones did you? Well, okay. So here's the deal. Intel had one at CES, and we have some video of it. It's hard to show 3D in two dimensions, but I thought it was interesting. You definitely get the experience. The problem is that the viewing angle really limits you because you have to be in exact locations. For the Intel demo, there were only 8 places in the 180-degree continuum around the screen where you actually got a true 3D view. So that would be really annoying. What would you have to have, like X's on your couch? Sit here so you get true 3D.
Yeah.
Don't sit here because it looks really jacked and you'll get seasick.
The same gadget story says it'll eliminate eye strain and widen the 3D viewing angle. So maybe they figured that part out. All I know is that these things are, the last I knew, couldn't even do 720p.
Yeah, that's
so you're going to be giving up a lot of resolution to do this.
But, okay, let's just call it iterative. I don't think that 3D is...
Iterative!
It's okay, thanks for doing that for me. I appreciate it. You totally got my back. So, since we've now determined that it's iterative, this is a step in the process. And I think the stats are such that 1 in 20 TVs, flat-screen TVs, sold this year will be 3D TVs. And they're supposed to be... The growth curve is supposed to be really big before 2014. I don't see it until these things go glasses-free.
I've always said that those sales figures can be right because what they'll do is they'll stop selling anything that doesn't have 3D in it. Because as the price comes down, it's not like HDTV where you had to do a lot.
Yeah.
You couldn't just take a tube TV and easily make it HD. Whereas with an HDTV, it's a lot easier to make it capable of 3D.
And the prices are pretty much there now. I mean, Sony's are $2,700 to $3,500 for 3D TV. Panasonic's $2,600 to $4,300. And their content is coming, too. I mean, they've got a ton of football this season. ESPN's going to be broadcasting 13 collegiate games in 3D. The first one, or one of the first three, they could get this, Boise State. Have you ever seen a Boise State football game?
Jason Howell will be very excited about that.
Have you seen their field? It's blue.
Oh, right. That's right. They have the blue field.
That would probably freak me out, to see the blue and the 3D, and your brain would just be kind of doing hyper-processing.
Well, it's like the first time you saw HD, and you're like, oh, my God, it's like I'm looking at the actual field.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Or, you know what it might be for? Is because the whole Avatar Blue People thing.
Oh, it's a tie-in.
Yeah, that's
James
what it
Cameron.
Is.
Yeah,
that's exact. It's the blue people and the blue football field,
exactly.
And they think that 3D
you know Boise State's players aren't actually blue, right?
No.
Yeah, they're not.
Did they have
they're
super like human powers?
No, they're just regular human beings.
Way to just ruin it for me, Tom.
This won't ruin. This will make it up for you. To you, how about $40 all you can eat unlimited data
like that?
Huh?
Yeah. Mobile.
Exactly. Virgin Mobile announcing unlimited mobile broadband plan that may be worth considering. One of the things they point out in this Macworld article is that not only do you get unlimited broadband for $40 a month on the Sprint network, because Sprint owns Virgin Mobile, but you could get a Novatel MiFi 2200 that would allow you to use all of that data on a MiFi.
Sorry, did I just hit your camera there?
Yeah, you did.
It's because your dog's eating.
Eating the chocolate box.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. But no, I mean, $40 a month for unlimited on a MiFi. My problem with the MiFi has been there are a few months when I use it where I go way over the limit, and I have to pull myself back. There was a point in Hawaii where I turned to Eileen when we were on vacation. I was like, I'm turning off the MiFi now. We have to stop using it.
Did you say, come on, Eileen?
I think we're about $20 over the limit right now. That's it. We can't go any further. This would save me for that. Not only that, but it's $40, which is $20 less than AT&T or Verizon charges.
Yeah. I mean, once you get used to that kind of connectivity all the time on your laptop, it's pretty addictive. Now, the fact that they're branding this as a budget brand, Eric, you made the really interesting point that it was like, why would they do that, right?
Why not just call it Sprint? Why Virgin Mobile?
Yeah.
To offer this service.
And I think it's a really good point, but I think, you know, one of the counters is they don't have the same coverage. So if you charge less, you call it Virgin Mobile, people have a different expectation of service and quality. They know it's a budget brand, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you buy a Toyota, you know it's not a Lexus.
Virgin Mobile's known for its prepaid phones, mostly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's another point, is that's bringing that audience into this broadband data world at a price point that perhaps will entice them to make the leap.
It's like when you buy the Kroger brand peanut butter, but it's actually Jif. They just rebrand it as Kroger and sell it for less because you don't have all the marketing budget behind it.
Way to go, everyman. When I did Lexus and Toyota, you had to drop the peanut butter bomb. Thanks, Tom.
Well, none of us are going to see advertisements for Lexuses or peanut butter anytime soon because we're all dumping our cable TV.
No.
For the first time in history, subscription TV lost subscribers in the second quarter of 2010, according to SNL Kagan. They released their analysis on Monday. Cable, direct broadcast satellite, and telco video collectively lost 216,000 customers and declined to 100.1 million in the quarter, compared to a 378,000 person gain during the same period last year. Most people are blaming the economy. The economy's down, so of course people are cutting out extra expenses, and in a lot of cases that could mean cable, or in a lot of cases it could mean they're not moving into new homes, they're moving back in with their parents, or they're moving in with their grandparents, or they're consolidating homes in all kinds of different ways, and they only need one cable subscription because they only have one residence.
That actually is a really interesting point that I hadn't thought about, because that might actually just be tied to the number of people who are now cohabitating. And I think that it really is a drop in the bucket when you look at the overall numbers, 100 million subscribers, and they lost 216,000 or something to that nature. That's really, really small, and it does seem like more of an economic blip than that's the end of TV, you know, okay, this is the tipping point, everything's going to go to IPTV. I'm not quite there yet.
No, but it does. The fact that it is the first time, there's been plenty of economic dips, right, in the history of subscription television. The first time ever it dropped probably means there's a little bit of a nudge effect from the fact that I can get my video online, or even a nudge effect from the fact that, you know what, I can play video games. I'd rather spend my $60 on a video game than spend $60 a month on television.
Or on my mobile device.
Yeah.
I can
go on Facebook and I can chat and I can play Warcraft and I can do all these things. And it's like, if my budget's limited, maybe I'm choosing that. And maybe I'm choosing to buy a few shows on iTunes and just watch less TV.
Right.
Than paying for a cable subscription.
I wonder what the time frame was, too. I wonder how much this might have to do with just how freaking hot it was. And people were like, I got to get out of my house.
Well, it was what, Q2?
Oh, that doesn't necessarily. Sometimes those weird seasonal things. You've always said that podcast numbers kind of go down in the summer. And viewing habits,
definitely.
You know, usually drop off. But you're historically, this is worth mentioning.
Absolutely. A very significant thing to keep an eye on. We'll see if it'll go back up. That's my guess.
Why do you think I got ABC on one side of my paycheck and Twit on the other? I'm no dummy.
Why do you think I... Never mind. I quit CBS. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, thankfully. The fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace has an easy-to-use UI. You can create and manage your website or blog without knowing a lick of HTML or cascading style sheets or any of that stuff. Although if you do know those things, they can help, because you can go and get under the hood and manipulate things as well. It just makes it easier no matter what your skill level. They have hundreds of design templates. They have forums, photo galleries, Google Maps integrated, website tracking, find out who's visiting your site. They're on a cloud architecture, so your site is fast and stable. You don't have to worry about it going down. If you want to use Squarespace for all of your website needs, you can build it, host it, and manage it from all in one place. Try it for free. Import your blog over there. If you've got it on Blogger or TypePad or Square or WordPress, take it over to squarespace.com for free. Just go there and use the offer code TNT when you sign up. You'll get a free trial and 10% off the lifetime of your account. So check them out. Squarespace.com, offer code TNT.
Tom, it is time for the News Fuse.
Yeah.
Downloads from Apple's iTunes U program topped the 300 million mark on Tuesday. The educational arm of the iTunes store has been online for about 3 years and includes content from over 800 universities around the world. Rah, rah, go team.
Lucasfilm has filed a $5 million trademark infringement lawsuit against Jedi Mind, a company that markets devices that allow people to control computers with their brain.
No.
The company's Mastermind application claims to let PC gamers move forward, back, punch, kick, shoot, and any other movement available in the game simply by thinking the command associated with the desired action. Lucasfilm said, Jedi Mind is not the name you're looking for. Stop using it.
Yahoo has finished the transition of its search product to being powered by Microsoft's Bing. Bing is now powering web, image, and video search for desktop and mobile versions of Yahoo. This fall, Yahoo will move its paid search to Bing also.
Nissan's director of product planning, Mark Perry, reassured people that the rumor of limited supply of the Nissan Leaf in the U.S. was untrue. Nissan's still targeting 25,000 units for the U.S. by the end of 2011.
And on the heels of that story, if you like the idea of having an electric car, but you're so worried pedestrians won't hear your super quiet engine, well, fear not. Toyota has announced an add-on sound effect for the Prius that emits from your car. Added bonus, it sounds creepy.
Yeah. Well, the music at the end wasn't the creepy sound, but that...
Zombies people, coming to eat your brain.
People will get out of your way. Intel and Nokia are jointly starting a research lab in Oulu, Finland that will attempt to create a 3D environment for mobile devices. The two companies already have a joint operation developing the MeeGo operating system.
And continuing our MeeGo news theme, photos showed up in a Chinese forum that purport to show a prototype Nokia handset running, yes, MeeGo. It's alleged to be the N9 device, similar to the Nokia N8, but with a slide-out QWERTY keyboard.
Finally, a whole mess of geeky words have been added to the new third edition of the Oxford Dictionary of English. Among the new entries are interweb, defriend, hater, and tweetup. I swear Andrew Kenny, lead singer of American Analog Set, invented the word interweb.
Wow.
He was the first person I ever heard use it, like back in 97.
And now it's become plural, interwebs.
Yeah. Well, that was George Bush.
Well,
did that.
But
President Bush didn't do that, but when he said internets, it got transferred over to interwebs.
That's a Hawaii thing. Everything singular becomes plural. Like, we don't shop at Costco, we go Costco's.
Yeah, maybe President Bush has just got a little of the native in him.
That's what, you know, we do have our first president here, you know, with Barack Obama. Although, you know, people are still petitioning the state of Hawaii for his birth certificate.
Right.
We're not going to get into that. We are going to tell you that it's somebody's birthday.
Ooh, are we gonna get cake? Whose birthday is it? Is it Mick Jagger's?
No. Oh. Could you believe that Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones licensed their iconic song to Windows?
I remember.
95.
Windows 95 is 15 years old today.
Wow, we're old.
Yeah. I still run it. No, I don't. I actually have Windows 98 on the old HP. I haven't turned it on in a year, though. I don't know. The hard drive might be corrupted. But, yeah, Windows 95 was a huge, huge, big step forward. They like, bought the entire Times Square in
New York.
It was
unbelievable. I remember they had Jay Leno doing part of the keynote. He was introduced Bill Gates. And then they had a training video that they made with, get this. Maybe should we ask our listeners to try and identify who these voices are? Big stars at the time.
Yeah. If you've got the video version, you can take a look.
Oh, pretty.
Oh, and no messy DOS buildup.
What is this, a paper towel commercial? There are four things you ought to know about Windows 95. It's easier, it's faster, it's more powerful, and it's got great compatibility. Now, point the mouse at the start button, bottom left, and click. Oh, look, Maddie, I'm computing.
Mm. Look, Maddie, I'm computing.
It's the stars of Friends.
Jennifer Aniston and Matt, what's his name?
They probably spent more on the promotion of Windows 95 than they did on the entire development cycle of Windows Vista.
I think that's an excellent point, and certainly twice that of me.
Anyway, happy birthday, Windows 95.
Yeah.
May your 15th year treat you better than the first 14.
On our calendar today, the Intel Developer Forum. This is one of those items that's a ways out, but just in case you want to know, September 13th to 15th, it will be in San Francisco. And concurrently, the demo conference will happen down at the Hyatt in Silicon Valley. This is where founders and new ideas are presented. No PowerPoint, no flashy presentations, just the facts, the elevator pitch. It's fascinating to see the kind of stuff that comes out of there.
Also, Samsung expected to officially unveil their Android tablet at IFA, the conference in Berlin, on September 3rd. Everybody's really buzzing about this tablet. It's going to be the great Android hope, I think, that everybody's been waiting for, because there's going to be a ton of Android tablets coming out.
And we saw so much excitement about the low-cost Android tablet that was launched through, of all places, Kmart. This Samsung tablet is gorgeous looking, that's for sure. And people are, you know, people who are not ready to shell out the big bucks for the iPad are really hoping for a much more cost-effective product that gives people similar functionality, gaming, books, web, video, the whole shebang.
Front-facing camera, video
definitely
calls. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Lost in the calendar today is new Dell phone.
Oh, yeah. Dell Aero, right? $99.
Yeah, $99.99 with a contract.
Android phone, but it's kind of this weird, one of those branded sort of like, oh, we're going to put our own flavor on it. Whenever there's the word flavor,
not a good thing.
I get really nervous. If you're going to flavor my OS, I'm going to pass, okay?
Yeah. I don't want Dell flavored anything. That sounds horrible. I'd rather have like
dude,
vanilla.
You're tasting a Dell. finally on the calendar, Twit will be at Dragon Con, and we'll have a meetup Saturday night, September 4th at the Sundial Restaurant, if you haven't heard us going on about that already. Also, you should know NSFW show will be on Friday night, September 3rd. Check your Dragon Con listings for showtime, but there will be a live NSFW you can attend as well.
And if for those of you who've never been to a meetup with Tom, he gets crazy. I mean, nutty.
You've never been to a meetup with me, have you?
I've never been to a meetup.
Too bad you're not going to be at Dragon Con. Let's move on to our voicemails, 260 TNT show. Our first one comes here from Steve, and he's got some comments about the Demon Internet proposal that we talked about yesterday for tiering broadband to favor video gamers.
Hey, TNT show. This is Steve from New York City. I know you guys touched on it, but the whole Demon gaming priority thing is absolutely brilliant, because basically what they're doing is they're taking the staunchest proponents of net neutrality, grabbing them by their own Achilles heel, and using them to break down the walls that they're building up against it. And the best part is that they're obfuscating why what they're doing is so bad by instituting this, the usage cap, because that's got nothing to do with the problem. The whole point about gaming is latency, not throughput. Gaming barely uses anything as far as bandwidth is concerned, but they'll use the bandwidth thing to distract people from the fact that ultimately they're prioritizing the speed at which the packets move. And it'll completely draw everybody's attention away from the fact that they're completely undermining everything that all the nerds have ever worked for as far as net neutrality goes. Thank you. Love the show. Bye.
All right. We admired your enthusiasm more than anything, but good points, too.
Yeah.
And we should point out that Demon Internet is assuring latency, a minimum latency, as well as, or I guess a maximum latency. They want to reduce the latency for you as well as provide bandwidth. So it's not just, Demon Internet may be just doing this without any regard to net neutrality is my point.
And you know, we were talking about this earlier, and it shows sort of the slippery slope that is net neutrality. It's like, sure, I'm a gamer. I want latency to be my priority. Sure, I'm a video. I upload video and I care desperately about my video quality. So let's prioritize that. It's a very slippery slope.
All right, let's move on to our emails, tnt@twit.tv. Sean wrote in and said, I just finished listening to yesterday's show, and in regards to Tom's assertion that Apple won't make a CDMA iPhone because LTE is on the horizon, I think you need to consider that Verizon has projected that they will only have 75% rollout of LTE by 2012, which means that through at least 2013, they aren't going to have 100% LTE coverage, and there's no way Verizon, who hangs their hat on their coverage, would release a device that won't work in 25% of their markets. If Apple really is interested in expanding in the U.S. and staunch the bleeding to Android, they aren't going to wait 3 years to do so. Just like the original iPhone didn't run 3G in a time when most high-end devices were doing so, I don't see any reason why Apple wouldn't release a 3G device now in a time where they are next to no LTE devices in the market anyway, and then they could move to a hybrid CDMA LTE in the coming years. Apple's MO is perfecting old tech, not necessarily pushing the envelope with new tech.
I think that our viewer comments today respect the fact that we have really thoughtful, engaged viewers have really good points. And this is such a good point because in the past, I don't think Apple felt the pressure to do anything on anybody else's timeline. But the rise of Android has definitely altered the equation around Verizon and alternate carriers. I feel like this is a whole new landscape than I thought it was even a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I do think Sean makes a really good argument about why we might see a Verizon iPhone sooner than later. The only two things that it made me think were, one, if you make a GSM phone right now, you could sell it worldwide. If you make a CDMA phone, you could sell it in like the United States and a couple other places. So there is an economy of scale involved there in ordering CDMA parts. The fact that LTE won't be coming until as late as he's talking about, I think is a really good point. And maybe that means we don't see a Verizon iPhone until much later. Or maybe it means those CDMA chips they're ordering are for an iPad with CDMA and a Verizon iPad. Who knows? But good stuff, Sean. Appreciate that.
I think it's a marketing point, too. And while the worldwide issue, that's not as much of a problem because they've got the iPhone has distribution and multi-carrier distribution worldwide. I think in the U.S. they have to deal with the bad press they're getting about dropped calls, and so much of that, if it really is the AT&T, they have to get alternate carrier support, and that's what's going to staunch the bleeding. To use that same quote, is they have to deal with that marketing issue.
If you don't know what LTE is, by the way, it's the next version. It's the 4G is what it's called often. It stands for long-term evolution. AT&T and Verizon are both going to use it, and it will be available worldwide. So you make an LTE phone, you can use it anywhere in the world.
This is an email from Lou in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, TNT. Tom said yesterday that he liked the heartbeat patent for Apple's iPhone because if someone tried to use his phone, then it would delete sensitive information. Well, Tom, what if it was my mom using my phone real quick or my girlfriend, Tom? I could see this applicable in a business world, but what about day-to-day simple consumer use? And I did a dramatic reading. Lou wasn't that dramatic, and he does finish, thanks and love the show. I just like to give a little dramatic Tom challenge.
We got a lot of these sort of reactions, both on Twitter and on email, to like, oh, great, so it senses my heartbeat, but then, you know, what about when a friend borrows it, or you know, what if I want to sell it to somebody else? It's like, I don't think it's going to work that way. I think it's like Find My iPhone. Your iPhone isn't constantly reporting itself stolen because it leaves your house. You have to activate that and say, like, my iPhone has been stolen. Please, you know.
Check the heartbeat check next to it.
Yeah, exactly. You say, look, I think an unauthorized user may have my iPhone. I'm turning this on. You know, go for it.
So. Yeah, it's not like, oh, here, you want to talk to Tom? Oh, shoot, there went my phone. Somebody just wiped itself.
I don't remember who somebody was like, what if I have a heart attack while I'm using the phone? That's when I need it the most.
I won't be able to call 911.
Yeah, I don't think that's my
angiogram went all wackadoo. My electrocardiogram. What kind of gram is it? I don't know.
Well, thank you all, though, for emailing in. TNT@twit.tv is the email address. Thanks for all for watching or listening to this show. You can get us every day, Monday through Friday, at twit.tv/TNT. And you can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.